for it to be useful. Also, if you're just an individual farmer that wants to make use of this technology, then you need to do frequent sampling and sequencing, because you need to see these mutations happening over time. So with one sample that's being sequenced, you still don't know, is this the strain that is already circulating on my farm, or is this a new introduction? So I think that it's then necessary to, for example, every 2 or 3 months, select pigs which you suspect to be Pierce virus or swine flu positive, and have the sample sequenced if the test comes back positively, so that you can keep track.
The Swinet Podcast Show Canada is only possible with the support and trust of innovative companies like
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. When it comes to 25-hydroxy D3 products, purity matters. Hy-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Learn more at hy-d.info. Top Pigs Norsvin, the world's most innovative swine genetics company.
Welcome to SwineIt Canada, brought to you by WaZenetics. I'm Aline Remus, your host, dedicated to bring you the latest insights in the industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode, where we'll explore a fascinating topic, the intersection between epidemiology, virology, and biosecurity, how genetic sequence data can help us to understand how viruses move between farms. Today's guest is Dr. Marina Meister. She's an assistant professor in veterinary epidemiology at the University of Utrecht in Netherlands. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Aline.
Would you mind, Dr. Meister, to tell us a little bit how you got to work in this field and what passionated you to choose this career path?
Well, I grew up on a farm with a lot of sheep, and already at a young age, I knew that I wanted to become a veterinarian. So that is also what I did. And then during my studies, I had a very nice relationship with someone who owned a pig farm. So that was actually the first time I got acquainted with pigs. And then, at a certain moment, I realized that I was more fit maybe to do research and teaching than to really become a vet who practices in the field. So then it was a natural choice for me to start doing research on diseases in swine. And that's what I'm still doing today.
Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A Diet Forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try DietForge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
We have that in common, actually. So
okay.
I also wanted to be a vet, and then I did few internships, and I end up saying, you know what, I think I want to work with nutrition and research, and I ended up going there. But my initial dream was to be a vet, but that I find that's a fascinating career. So thank you for actually pursuing that and going to science. I understand that your focus is in understand how viruses spread within pig farms, between farms, using viral genetic sequence data combined. Could you just tell us a little bit how you use these tools, how genetic sequence data can be obtained and used to actually identify transmission routes and improve biosecurity?
So I can tell you that I did a master's in epidemiology. So there, usually what we use is the timing when animals become infected. And then over time, you can study, okay, who infects whom and how fast does a pathogen like a virus spread through, for example, a farm with pigs. But I did a course on molecular epidemiology, and there we learned that you can also read this genetic sequence data, so this the biological code of, for instance, a virus, and you can actually combine that with this data on when the pigs become infected, and then you get more information about exactly which pig infects which other pig.
Dr. Meister, could you explain to us in simple terms what is genetic sequence data?
Yes, of course. So all things that are alive, all animals, all humans, but also all bacteria, viruses, etc., they have DNA or RNA, and that is just a piece of biological code, kind of. So they are the small building blocks that that contains all the information on how to develop, how to reproduce, and all the functions that you have or that the virus has. And that if we talk about genetic sequence data, then we mean that we have kind of transcribed this biological code, that we have read all the building blocks of, for example, a virus. And for every virus, it's slightly different. So we can distinguish one strain from another strain by reading this genetic sequence from the strain.
That makes sense. And it's kind of the cooking book of the cell, right? Like is that right? Like, is the recipe of the cell?
Yeah, so, you're right.
How easy is to obtain this data sequence compared today, for example, because you're talking probably when you start your master was a very different scenario than today. Because today, even when we say that, I think people might have an understanding that it's very difficult to obtain this data.
Yeah, well, you just need the normal samples that are already being collected, like saliva samples or blood samples. But indeed, there is an extra step. So first, the samples can be tested by a PCR, for example, which you would normally also do in a lab. And now the positive results, those samples go through for an extra step of sequencing. And I'm not performing that analysis myself, but I think that actually the COVID-19 pandemic has really speeded up the process. So more and more labs have seen the advantages of sequencing samples. So it also has become a lot cheaper. So now for, in the Netherlands, at least for a few hundred euros, you can order, you can ask a lab to sequence the sample.
And I suppose then it's also much more, as you say, much more common than used to be. So that is a big leap forward. In what tells you if you find a new strain in a farm?
Okay, well, so then first need to understand that if we talk about sequence data, we talk about the DNA or the RNA of a virus mainly. Some of you may know that viruses can evolve over time. So small changes in that genetic RNA code are happening. If you would regularly sequence samples from the same farm, a farm that, for instance, is endemic for Pierce virus, then over time, every time you get a sequence, you will find a slightly different Pierce virus because it mutates. But then when you suddenly find an entirely different genetic sequence of Pierce, then this is an indication that maybe a new introduction of the virus has occurred, so that you have kind of received a different Pierce virus from maybe a different farm.
This helps also to distinguish between like an internal circulation versus external introduction?
That's exactly what it is, yeah. So, of course, if you see that new Pierce virus strains are entering your farm regularly, then probably there are some flaws in your external biosecurity. So, for instance, you're buying gilts from another farm, and maybe Pierce Virus is brought in with the gilts. Whereas if you always find more or less the same Pierce Virus strain, then you know that the virus is circulating on your farm, so spreading from pig to pig, or maybe from sow to offspring, but that no new strains are entering the farm. So then you may focus on other biosecurity measures.
That's extremely interesting. I kind of had a slight idea, but I could not imagine how precise that actually it was, and is extremely useful from not only for detection, because before you explained that to me, I was just thinking, oh, it's a detection tool, but actually it's also an investigative tool that can actually help you to identify where it's coming from and come up with new biosecurity measures. So that is a huge advancement.
Yeah, I think so too. And especially if farmers are like in the same area, for example, a geographical area, if they are willing to share which genetic sequence they have on their farm, then you can really get insights in how a virus like Pierce virus is spreading. Because, of course, we usually suspect the wind to be one of the causes for a new introduction, but then you can really see if that is the case, or that maybe the virus came from a farm that is way further apart, but via transport of animals or other contacts between the farms.
So going even further, it is in this part of the use of data to study biosecurity breaks. Can you do this for all pathogens or specifically for virus?
Yeah, that's a relevant question. So viruses, they are able to mutate, so to have these changes in the genetic code faster than, for example, bacteria or parasites. So also the diversity of some viruses is much bigger. So in one region, you can have many Pierce virus strains, but a different pathogen that doesn't mutate so fast, then maybe all the farms have more or less the same strain. So then you can imagine that it gives you less information if you look at it this way, because the strains may be quite similar. So then you cannot distinguish this new introduction from this circulation within your own farm. So these methods are mainly useful for viruses that quickly mutate. So Pierce virus is a good example, but also, for example, swine flu, that's also a virus that can mutate fast. There are more examples, but these are the main two that I'm focusing on in my research.
So Pierce and influenza, they mutate fast enough that makes them good candidates for this sequence epidemiology, right? So is that basically what makes them good candidates?
Yeah, and for example, African swine fever virus, to give another example, that mutates, it's also a virus, but it mutates about 100 times as slowly as Pierce virus. So even though they're both viruses, there's still a difference also in then the variation in these genetic sequences.
Funny enough, because I had this in the back of my mind and I was going to ask you if there was like some cases or sequencing did not provide like insightful. And I had like swine fever in the back of my mind thinking, wouldn't that be like a great tool? Because everyone is struggling with this, right? So we're always looking for tools that can help us to do early detection disease. So I just wanted to get your insight in that.
Yeah, well, but then for African swine fever virus, if, for example, in the Netherlands, we are still hopefully forever, but you never know, free from the virus. But we could maybe distinguish if it would break here, we could see from the genetic sequence, maybe if it comes from Poland or it comes from Italy, for example, just because when it already circulates for a long time, it will still build up these mutations. So at a certain point, there will be different sequences in Poland than in a different area. So then you could still say something about it. But then if it breaks here in one farm and it's spreading to other farms within the Netherlands, then it will be difficult, because then the virus has not had time yet to mutate. So you won't find who, like, which farm infects which other farm.
That's extremely interesting. So going back to PIRS and influenza, using this tool also help you to track back where the outbreak was?
Yes, it does. And also even the timing when the virus is being introduced. So because these mutations build up with a regular pace, for example, every week there's one change in the genetic sequence, then you can calculate back when the virus has entered the farm. So you can even say something, maybe look back, okay, talk with the farmer, what happened in that period of time? Did you maybe buy pigs from a different farm than you normally do, as an example?
So using sequence data could actually help to guide the disease control strategies, like in regions, for example.
Yeah, that's also the aim that I have. So now in the Netherlands, we have a new plan to become PIRS virus free by 2040. And the first step now is that all farms are going to be monitored every 4 months, so sampling. And also we offer then that the samples are being sequenced. And in the end, we want to study like what are the major routes of spread of PIRS virus across farms in the Netherlands. And we are going to do that by using these genetic sequences from PIRS.
So can we say that we're moving towards a future where farms share sequence data to improve disease control in the Netherlands?
I hope so. Well, it is of course important that farmers see the advantages of these methods, but I can also imagine that some aren't willing to share this publicly. But I know that in Denmark, they are actually already doing that. So farmers can see a kind of dashboard, and they can, for example, see if their neighbors are still PIRS virus free or if they have had a new outbreak. So there it is possible. And I hope that by explaining how this works, that they are also willing to be open about it.
What are the conditions necessary to increase the usability of this genetic sequence data?
Yeah, so for it to be useful, also if you're just an individual farmer that wants to make use of this technology, then you need to do frequent sampling and sequencing because you need to see these mutations happening over time. So with one sample that's being sequenced, you still don't know, is this the strain that is already circulating on my farm, or is this a new introduction? So I think that it's then necessary to, for example, every 2 or 3 months select pigs which you suspect to be PIRS virus or swine flu positive and have the sample sequenced if the test comes back positively so that you can keep track. And also what's an important condition. So for PIRS virus, we have these modified live vaccines. So the vaccine that we use is also almost an alive virus. So that virus we can also sequence. So if we take a sample right after the pigs are being vaccinated, then and we sequence it, then we see the vaccine virus. But then we have no idea what is going on the farm because it's not the sequence that is circulating, it's the one that's being vaccinated. So also the timing of sampling is an important condition to make good use of this genetic sequence data.
Here you're touching in the idea of standardized sampling protocols for the farms and the continuous follow-up. Could you give me your thoughts in the role of database and surveillance networks? I say that because like I work in precision livestock farming. So like everything that you're telling me is making me think of like building a huge database that you guys have access and can monitor. And then by using this standardized sampling, you can actually go tracking and indeed do early disease detection because you start to see the evolution of those virus, right? Or am I completely out of my mind?
Yeah, no, you're right. And I know that in, for example, the United States, they are much further than we are with the Pierce fires that's going on there. So they are, I think, like almost every farmer submits samples for sequencing. And there's one university where they collect all this data, and they are also like showing how the virus is evolving on a regional level over time. They're showing that Pierce virus, like, without, besides mutations, it can also like swap genetic material, so the virus can quickly change in that way. They're also keeping track of that. And yeah, my ambition would be that this also happens in the Netherlands, in Europe, actually. No, not in the Netherlands, in Europe. So for swine flu, we're a bit further. There's now international initiatives to start a database, and actually a same database where also human flu strains are shared. So there it's happening. But for Pierce virus, we should really start doing that. You are right. Yeah.
So if I'm gathering it right, it requires collaboration between veterinarians, researchers, and producers to have this data. And when we're talking about producers sharing data, I think you explained beautifully, saying that, well, there is concerns of sharing that data. And I absolutely understand that. Do you think if we would develop protocols that would ensure anonymity of these producers, they would be more willing to share that data?
Yeah, I would definitely think so. I think that's also how they do it in the US. So they don't know, for example, the locations of the farms. So they get like just an anonymous ID so that you do know which sequences are from the same farm, but you don't know which farm it is. So that would, yeah, that could definitely help. And also you need collaboration between laboratories, because actually you also want then that they have kind of the same protocol for getting the sequence, so that if two labs get the same sample, that they also end up with the same sequence. Because if you're really looking at those mutations, it must not be caused by just a different approach when sequencing. It must be really because the virus is mutating. So you need a lot of collaboration. And we now start nationally. So we now have the biggest laboratory on board. We have pharmaceutical companies on board who are also to farmers offering to have sample sequenced, because they are also selling the vaccines, for example, that are necessary to control the clinical signs of Pierce virus. And yeah, but in the end, you then also need these international collaborations and trust that we can share it anonymously. So I guess you're right that we should make sure that is possible.
What do you think then that is? Do you think this is one of the biggest barriers that we have today to use sequence more widely in the health management? Because I find it extremely interesting that you say that you have actually companies offering this opportunity of sequencing the data. So what would you think that is the biggest barrier for adoption?
I think that it's sometimes also just that, for example, a company doesn't know how useful it can be yet. So they are offering it and they are saving this sequence data somewhere, just locally within their company. And it's not that they don't want to share it. They could share it anonymously, but they must first understand that this is useful. And there should be also a very nice platform for it to share it. So that's also why for swine influenza, it's working now, I think, because we have adopted a platform that's also being used for human flu. And now, we are reminding partners every time, like, oh, share your sequences, but it is actually happening. So I think it's the barrier may also be related to the knowledge regarding what we can do with sequences, also to really help farmers and on country level or international level, help combat these viruses.
Before we go to our three final questions, if you could give like one practical recommendation of how they can better use data to improve security, or how producers could use this, what would that be?
I would say start small with your neighboring farmers you probably know them. You're colleagues of each other. Maybe you even have the same veterinarian. Discuss if you want to share with each other how it, whether you have PRRS and swine flu on your farm, and whether you are willing to share the sequences so that you can at least on that level see if this can help you to prevent further spread of the viruses.
That's actually very good advice. I think like it starts small and is also a way to start to build trust, right? And see how it goes. So I love the idea. Thank you for sharing that with us.
It's time for our famous three.
So now we're going to go for our final three questions of the podcast, the standard questions we always ask. And Dr. Meister, I would like to hear from you. What is one of your favorite resources linked to keep you up to date in this field of epidemiology? What is your go-to resource when you need more information?
Well, so I think for epidemiology, I just read a lot of scientific articles, and I get a lot of inspiration actually also from human medicine, because there they are using sequence data already for a longer time. But also, like, my PhD was about a virus that is not causing any problems in pigs. It's a zoonotic virus. And there I hardly had any contact with veterinarians in the fields because they weren't really aware of this virus. And now that I'm working on PRRS virus and influenza, now I'm really in a group of with a lot of pig veterinarians. We come together monthly and I learn so much about just the practicalities of this kind of work and how to apply it in the field. So I think that is a really important source of information and also make me aware that what I'm doing should be useful for the farmers and for the vets and not only for other researchers. So that is really helpful.
Oh, it is. Thank you. It's a very, very good point of view. And outside of academia, what is your favorite book or resource, movie?
My favorite book is, it's called Outlander, I think. It's by Diana Gabaldon. Yeah, I just like the romantic stories and maybe a bit of history in there as well. So that's that I really enjoy. It's actually also a series on TV. So I've also watched it after I've read all the books.
I will confess that I also read book, watched the series. I love it. And like I think what attracted me a lot was the Scotland part of it. And then I went to Scotland to actually to visit and see it and fell in love with Scotland. So
I've also been to Scotland after I've read the books. Yeah, same.
Yes. And in your opinion, what is that sets a successful swine professional apart from those that are not in this industry?
Ooh, successful. So maybe I'm noticing now that it's really important that you talk with a lot of other people who enjoy working in this field. So to inform each other, get inspired. So even just listening to other episodes of this podcast has inspired me and made me think about the connections between all the different topics. So I think to be successful, you need to be really enthusiastic about the field, about the people working in the field, and talk with a lot of these people.
So that concludes another episode of Swine It Canada, presented to you by Wyzenetics. Thank you for joining us today. And thank you, Dr. Meister, for sharing your insights in how genetic sequence data can help us to better understand viral transmission and strengthen biosecurity in pig production.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
And for you listening to us, do not forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay updated in future episodes. If you have other questions to Dr. Meister, you can comment in this episode, ask the questions, and we invite her back to come and answer some more of these questions with us. Do not be shy of sharing your thoughts on that. We really value your feedback. Until next time, this is Aline Remus from Swine It Canada signing off.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.